Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings. Welcome on board WKOK's live telephone talk show. On the Mark, I'm Mark Lawrence. Mr. Joe is directly across from me. Lynn Hall's our fabulous producer on the other side of the glass. And I'm glad to say we got a guest in the studio. We're going to be talking to him about his campaign. First of all, Sunbury Motor Company is our sponsor. So we won't have open phones on this first segment here. But we'll open up the lines the latter part of this half hour and next hour. And we'll invite you to call. And in the meantime, if you wish to call or email or text us, you can do so. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com and text us at 70236. Include the keyword OTM. Brian Kerstetter is back. He's been in our studio on three campaigns to be here. And are you saying third time is the charm? Does that phrase come off your mouth?
I think you said that, Mark, at one point. Yeah, I think those were your words, not mine.
Okay.
I hope you're right.
Okay. Well, yeah, this could very well could be. But yeah, he's running for Union County District Attorney, Lewisburg Attorney, eminently qualified as a candidate for Union County DA. He's been a public defender and a first assistant DA. So in Union County. So he's got all the right elements on the resume checked off. So we'll say good luck right now. So welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming in.
Absolutely.
I do, too.
Okay.
Appreciate you coming in.
I said
thanks,
we,
Joe.
Or did I just say
you
I?
You said I.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, Joe feels strongly that he be included. After
That's
80
right.
years, he's concerned that somebody's going to leave him somewhere.
Thank you.
Okay.
People
your
keep
campaign.
Trying.
Tell us why run for office, please.
Yeah, sure. So I got a criminal justice degree when I was in college, King's College in Wilkes-Barre. I was raised by a police officer. My father, Ron Kerstetter, served as a deputy sheriff. Back in the 70s. He retired as Lewisburg's police chief in 1999. So I've always been around law enforcement, not only while I was growing up, but after I went to law school. I was given my first job in the district attorney's office by then district attorney Mike Sholley, now judge and retired judge Mike Sholley. And I continued to do that work for about 7 years. Took a little break from that, came back to the Snyder County District Attorney's Office in 2006, I believe. Served an additional 10 years over there. Just continued to actually took a job as first assistant district attorney in Union County here. Pete Johnson came to me last year and indicated that he might be interested in retiring. Would he be able to pass the torch to me? Of course, I jumped at the opportunity. I'm honored to have his endorsement. I'm honored to have the endorsement of Union County law enforcement. I'm honored to have the endorsement of Teamsters Local 464, which has some of its members, corrections officers, assistant district attorneys within the area. So I've been practicing law for 23 years. As I said, 17 years of those years has been as a first assistant district attorney in both Union and Snyder County. I'm a fourth generation Union County resident. I raised my family here. I'm a girl dad. My daughter is currently a junior at Pitt University. So Pete Johnson said it best, law enforcement's in my blood. This is what I do. This is what I've always wanted to do. A lot of people ask me why I didn't make another run for common pleas judge around here. And the answer to that is again, this is the job that I feel like I was always meant to do. There was no way of knowing at the time when Pete Johnson was going to retire. So this is where I'm meant to be. This is what I want to do.
Well, you have a you have a very definite idea about how the office should run, and you've been working for Pete Johnson for the last several years. Is there anything you would do differently, or what do you think the strengths of the office are now, and what would you do to improve them or strengthen them?
Yeah, I mean, Pete's done a great job over the 28 years that he's been there. I don't think that there's a whole lot that needs to be changed. I think simply being there is an important thing. I think when people see that a district attorney who's being paid the generous salary that they're being paid is actually there all the time and accessible and out at public events and things of that sort, going out to nursing homes and talking to the elderly about scams that might be being run on them, being out in schools, talking to kids about the dangers of drug use. I might be interested in revamping, if you will, the DARE program in the schools. But I think when the public sees law enforcement, and specifically the district attorney, out in public, that sort of instills in them, confidence that, and maybe gives them a sense of safety when they see that. So I don't think there's much that I'd do differently than Pete did. Maybe just one or two things. I think that his and my view on crime and punishment are pretty similar.
So. Now, if elected, you're going to do more than just prosecute. Explain how you'll probably keep up your camp cadet work and the DARE work, that your work on trying to, well, they're both young people-oriented things, but your work on helping, reduce crime and nip it in the bud or stop it before it starts, I guess, really.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, back in 2004, I think it was, I was one of the four founding board members for Susquehanna Valley Law Enforcement Camp Cadet, and we all know where that program is today. That's something that I'm very proud of. Unfortunately, it hasn't been something that I have been super involved in of late just because of schedules. I'm hoping that can change. If I get elected district attorney, I'm certainly interested in continuing those programs, perhaps nipping some problems in the bud before cases actually come before me as a district attorney. Drug use, drug dealing is an epidemic that we have in central Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania as a whole, in the country as a whole. After I leave here today, I'm actually going to be doing preliminary hearings down at District Judge Mensch's office in Mifflinburg. And when I looked at my schedule this morning, I noted that there were over half the cases, and sometimes it's more than half, but in this particular day, today, it's about half the cases that are in some manner or another involving drug use. So that is certainly a problem that we need to address. If we can get the drug epidemic under control somehow, some way, I think that, the ability to prosecute crime will follow. We'll be able to reduce crime rates in Union County because of that. So,
well, yeah, that's a vexing issue. I'm sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead.
That is a vexing issue. Do you have any ideas? I mean, where do you start? Because it isn't families that are struggling or on the margin or necessarily already involved in some crime. It's good families. It's everybody. It's productive families. It's everybody.
Yeah, I think, the main goal is to try to treat the users, perhaps those who are involved in what we call victimless crimes. They're being prosecuted for, possession. They're being prosecuted for having paraphernalia on them. We have a drug treatment court program in the 17th Judicial District, which includes Union County, and that program has really done a great job in reducing recidivism for users. And then I think we need to punish, really, to the limit of the law, the dealers. We need to prevent drugs from coming into our community. I talked the other week about, having Interstate 80 running through Union County and what easy access that brings to the Philadelphia, the Pittsburgh area. Folks can zip across 80, straight down Route 15, and obviously we're right here, so it's a very prime location For drugs to be brought into the community. But I really think that if we strike a balance between punishment and rehabilitation, the problem may very well resolve itself.
I'm curious about resources. From a district attorney standpoint, I mean, you work with the police, you work with the court system. What kind of things do you need as a district attorney to succeed, to do all the things you say you want to accomplish?
Well, yeah, Joe, I think it all starts with money, unfortunately. And, you know, we always want to be sensitive to, you know, the local taxpayers, but everything costs money, whether it's money for additional staff, whether it's money for additional police officers, whether it's money for a new jail or something like that. I mean, law enforcement requires money. You know, one of the problems that we face in Union County is that we have a jail that has about 28 beds in it. And we joke and say that we could fill up the jail, you know, every day on sentencings. And sentencings generally last between 2 and 3 days at least 4 times per year. So if you do the math, there just aren't enough beds in Union County to house all of the inmates. And what happens is we have inmates who are being housed outside of the county in Northumberland County and Snyder County and other locations. And the taxpayers are paying approximately $75 per day per inmate to house those inmates outside of the area. And, you know, that results in pressure, you know, pressure to come up with diversionary programs, pressure to come up with some sort of alternative disposition that doesn't necessarily result, you know, in a jail sentence for someone. And that's just a reality that we have to face. You know, sometimes the attitude is, you know, just lock them up and throw away the key. And while I might love to be able to do that in certain occasions, logistically, it's just not possible. So unfortunately, you know, it all comes back to money. And there's things that we can do, you know, when we arrest someone who's been involved in drug activity, if they have, you know, funds on them, money, we can ask that those assets be forfeited to the Commonwealth to be used in drug prosecutions mm-hmm. and things like that. I'm a big advocate for that. You know, that can certainly help with the process.
And what about PFAs? We actually talked about this yesterday, domestic violence, PFAs. I think Joe said they're not worth the paper they're printed on because women aren't protected. Well, it's primarily women, but it's families and some men, too. What can we do about that?
Well, as far as PFAs in general, I mean, remember that starts out as a civil matter between two individuals. And, you know, I've always said that a piece of paper never actually, you know, protected anyone. You know, the district attorney's office really only gets involved in PFA matters when someone is alleged to have violated a PFA. A petition for indirect criminal contempt of court gets filed at the common pleas level, and district attorneys, you know, prosecute those crimes. As far as PFAs themselves, I mean, the people that have active PFAs really need to be vigilant. There was a case that I recall years ago over in Northumberland County where a judge actually denied a PFA for someone. And shortly after the hearing, the parties met up at the bank and the individual shot the protected party. So now it's become a situation where out of an overabundance of caution in cases that may be questionable, you know, the PFAs are still being entered. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes we have to face the reality that they're being used as a sword rather than a shield, you know, but 99% of the time, that's not the case. But again, as district attorneys, we don't get involved in PFAs per se until someone is alleged to have violated.
What about domestic violence issues, though? I know they're always rough for police departments. How rough are they for district attorneys?
Well, they're extremely difficult because you run into the whole he said, she said problem. You know, only two people generally know what actually happened during a domestic violence incident. And the law really handcuffs the police when it comes to domestic violence matters, because if they're called to a domestic violence incident and they see evidence of domestic violence on one or both parties, then the law requires them to make an arrest. And that puts us in a position of having to prosecute. And as you all know, I mean, sometimes victims change their minds for one reason or another. You know, a domestic violence incident could have been alcohol alcohol-induced. It could have been drug-induced. You know, and upon reflection, you know, the parties decide that they don't want to go forward, or at least the victim decides that they don't want to go forward, and that makes things obviously difficult to prosecute for a district attorney. We're very good. Our police officers are very good. Law enforcement in this county is very good about getting written statements from victims in domestic violence incidents so that we can use those if necessary if we have otherwise reluctant victims, not necessarily to pressure them into doing anything, of course, but to sort of remind them about, you know, what they said happened on the day in question, because memories fade over time. So domestic violence incidents are one of the most difficult to prosecute that we have.
Well, we've often gotten into the discussion about gun control on this program and common sense measures that would make us safer. From a district attorney's position, do you see anything that would make us safer in terms of legislation that should be considered at the House or Senate, or anything as a district attorney you could do to solve some of this, or make it at least less attractive for people to go out and shoot one another?
Well, I mean, if you're referring to, you know, red flag laws and things like that, Joe.
Anything.
Anything, really. That's a tough question. It really is. And unfortunately, you know, I'm not working in a legislative position. I would leave that question really up to the legislators to resolve. I mean, I'm a huge supporter of the Second Amendment. Always have been. I'm a gun owner. You know, I'm very careful about, you know, the idea of infringing on someone's right to possess a firearm. I think our Pennsylvania Constitution speaks very specifically that right, you know, won't be infringed. That said, that doesn't mean that I believe that every person out there should have a gun or deserves to own a gun, you know, in certain cases. So, I mean, if legislation was very narrowly tailored, you know, to serve a compelling government interest in trying to resolve this epidemic of people walking into public locations and committing, you know, mass murder, then that's something that I can certainly get behind. What exactly that looks like, I just don't know.
Well, we've been very lucky in this area in that we don't have that kind of misuse of firearms. And so it's easy to make the argument that people's rights should be protected, because around here, I would say the overwhelming majority are decent, law-abiding citizens who don't misuse the privilege of having a firearm. But in metropolitan areas, let's say like if you were running against Krasner in Philadelphia, there's definite issues there with respect to what they charge people with and how they would. It almost, to me, what I'm driving at is it almost seems like unequal enforcement of the law.
Well, I mean, remember, in the city of Philadelphia, you have totally separate gun laws. You know, your concealed carry permit that's issued by the Union County Sheriff's Department is no good in the city of Philadelphia.
Really?
That's correct. You need to have your own, I think it's City of Philadelphia concealed carry permit, if they're even allowing that now. But you may not carry a gun concealed within the city limits of Philadelphia on your concealed carry permit that's issued around here. So,
how can they do that?
Good question. But they do, and they have for an awfully long time. As long as I can remember, that's been an issue in the city of Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is the only location in Pennsylvania where that applies.
Well, in New York City, you can't carry your gun in New York City. Now, that's another state, so that's, you know, a slightly different thing.
Yeah, and we have reciprocal laws with a lot of states that will allow you to carry a firearm in jurisdictions other than Pennsylvania. The Attorney General has a website that'll tell you, you know, in what states your concealed carry permit in Pennsylvania is valid.
Okay. Some other topics. One of our listeners says, don't let any guest out of the building without asking about supporting the death penalty, legalizing pot, and DUI laws. You know who that is.
Well, that takes the rest of the half hour.
Well,
yeah, we could certainly talk about
you're
that.
You're already death qualified, right?
You don't need to be death qualified as a prosecutor.
Oh,
you only
okay.
need to be death qualified if you're a defense attorney. You know, in every death penalty case, there needs to be two defense attorneys for obvious reasons to represent individuals who are charged with cases that potentially involve the death penalty. And as everyone knows at this point, we currently have a moratorium on the death penalty, and I don't really see that changing anytime soon. I think as long as we have Democratic leadership in the governor's position, I don't really foresee that changing.
But if a capital case comes to you, you'll still prosecute it.
100%.
For death row.
100%.
Okay, so you'll do that.
Yeah.
You'll do what you're legally bound to do?
Agreed. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's. I mean, I guess it's at the district attorney's discretion as to whether or not. I don't guess. I know that it's at the district attorney's discretion as far as whether or not to certify a case for the death penalty. But I would have no problem whatsoever, you know, if the facts warranted it in pursuing it, because you know the reality is it may change down the road, and I think it's a useful tool for a prosecutor to have under his or her belt.
Legalizing and taxing pot. The conversation's underway in Harrisburg.
Yeah, it really is. And I can say as a prosecutor, you know, we're seeing cases. In fact, I have one today. You know, drug DUIs, marijuana DUIs. And you know, I'm not sure how I feel about legalizing marijuana as a whole. But I can tell you if our DUI laws remain as they're currently written, that's where we really need to go. Because the problem that we're facing is that somebody could have used marijuana 20 days ago and still have THC in their system when they're stopped by the police. And if there's a basis to have a blood draw as a result of that police encounter and THC shows up in that individual's blood, they are in violation of Pennsylvania's vehicle code as it relates to the DUI laws. They are not in any manner impaired. They are not under the influence at that time because they used marijuana 20 days ago, yet they are still technically driving under the influence. And that just doesn't make common sense. That shouldn't make common sense to anyone. And it's very difficult, you know, for me to explain to people, you know, why that constitutes a crime. You know, having your medical marijuana card in Pennsylvania is not your get out of jail free card as it relates to, you know, driving under the influence. So we have people that are legally using marijuana and still in violation of our, you know, DUI laws in certain occasions.
Well, how does that work? If I have a medical marijuana card and I've used it, mm-hmm. am I not permitted to drive?
You're not permitted to drive while you would have any THC in your system.
How would I know when it's gone?
You wouldn't.
Okay.
That's the problem.
So catch 22.
It's a total catch 22, and that's the problem that we run into. Trying to explain logically that which is illogical is nearly impossible.
All right. We're going to give you an opportunity for a closing remark. Anything to add?
Yeah, sure. I mean, as I indicated, I believe that I'm the candidate with the most experience. I'm currently serving in the office. I have, you know, the endorsement of law enforcement. I would encourage your listeners to check out my website. It's kerstetterforda.com. You can learn more about me by visiting that site. We're also on social media, particularly Facebook. If you search Kerstetter for DA, you can find out sort of what we're doing, where we've been, where we're going, get more information about me. I'd encourage everyone to please get out and vote on May the 16th, and while you're there, you might as well cast your vote for me.
Oh, yeah, please do, you say. Okay, Brian Kerstetter, Lewisburg attorney, candidate for Union County District Attorney, registered Republican. There is no Democratic candidate, so if you pull away this nomination, it is very likely, well, you'd have a great chance to get elected in the fall. Good luck, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We're going to switch to open phones. We'll introduce that momentarily here on WDKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
All right, welcome on board, everybody. WDKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. I want to tell you the telephone number again. It's 570-743-9565. You'd have to be a speedy dialer, but we do have a speedy producer, so we would be able to get you on the air. You can email us at onthemark@wdkok.com and text us at 70236. On the Mark is brought to you by the Sunbury Motor Company. It's a family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street, Sunbury, and Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Find out more about them at sunburymotors.com. I've been kind of going through the list here, talking about some of the vehicles, so let's take them in alphabetical order. We'll talk about the Ford Bronco. Well, let's skip over that, because guess what? The orders are selling out again. The Bronco's become increasingly popular. Consumer Reports loved it. Cost less than $50,000. You can get maybe 20 miles to the gallon most of the time, and 30 miles on the highway, and probably about, 12 miles an hour in the dead of winter if you keep it in four-wheel drive, driving around in the snow. But 2.3-liter four-cylinder turbo is standard, but they do have a 2.7-liter turbo V6 in case you really want to climb mountains and you want to put some big knobbly tires on it. They have an off-road ready Bronco as well. That's the sport that can get built up, and it's just a vehicle that you would love to have. Fantastic ratings by Consumer Reports. It's an opportunity for you to get a great vehicle from the Sunbury Motor Company, and they got some of them in stock. Ford Broncos. SunburyMotors.com if you are interested in hooking yourself up with one of those, or hooking yourself up to one of those, too. They got a trailer hitch so you can tow yourself around. And I guess that wouldn't work exactly. Are you okay, buddy?
No, I'm picturing you towing yourself around.
Remote control. It's all simple. Driverless vehicles, Joe. You got to get with the program here.
I do. There's a fascinating story. You know, we were talking about the federal government and laws and how they're applied here. There's an interesting story. The Catholic hospital system and the Biden administration have been at odds. The hospitals have been trying to be forced by the closed, losing their accreditation from the federal government over an eternal flame that these Catholic hospitals keep in their chapels.
Oh.
They threatened. The federal government had attempted to force the St. Francis Catholic Hospital system in Oklahoma to choose between losing their accreditation for Medicaid and Medicare and removing eternal flames from its chapels, which is central to their faith.
Why?
Well, because they think other people would be offended by it. It's a Catholic hospital. If you're offended by it, don't go there. If there's a Jewish hospital, I wouldn't expect them to take down menorahs.
Medicare is funny.
It's ridiculous.
Our government's funny. This is WKOK Sunbury. Open phones coming up.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings. Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the Mark, I'm Mark Lawrence. Joe McGranahan.
I'm here, sir.
Good conservative.
Am I?
Natural-born listener?
Yes, I admit I am.
Some days.
Some days, right.
Although
when somebody's saying something worth hearing, which you seldom do, but I...
I
have an open mind about it.
Some days when I put a... when I am putting on a good point and trying to talk about a good way to think about something, you just fold your arms and say bah humbug and turn your headphones to one of our sister stations.
Bah humbug. Yes, I like that. That's quite a phrase. Bah humbug.
You listen to Lynn Hall on Eagle 107 sometimes.
I do.
So that's your shtick, to ignore me. But anyway, so that's Joe. His favorite four-letter word comes at the dinner table when both of his grandchildren look across the table and say,
Papa,
what happened to your hair?
That's right. They
okay.
do.
On the Mark sponsor.
They're very concerned about it.
They're very concerned about you. I don't think they care about the hair so much as just deep, deep and wonderful concern about your ongoing help in their lives.
Mental health.
And money. They know you're a glongzillionaire, so they're
right.
following
They're figuring
you.
They're going to get some of it one of these days.
You never know. All right. On the Mark is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our telephone number is 570-743-9565. That's 570-743-WKOK. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com, and you can text us at 70236. Include the keyword OTM. We would love to hear from you. We got some emails already sent in, so we could look at some of those as time goes on. I'm going to do news headlines, but most of all, we would like you to call in 570-743-9565. In the news today, mum's the word from state police on the Coltmont active shooter standoff situation from last night. Started around 7:30 p.m. and was done done after midnight, but they do not say how it was resolved. The 1000 block of Chestnut Street, Route 61, was blocked during the incident. Numerous law enforcement converged on the scene. Some gunshots were heard there. The state police response team was there as well. Again, troopers not telling us how that resolved. Police in Northumberland say a man died after he rode a motorized bicycle into the side of a tractor trailer. Officers tell us 21-year-old Luis Barreto Perez of 218 Front Street, Northumberland, died in the incident Monday afternoon. They say he was riding a mountain bike with an aftermarket gasoline motor along Wheatley Avenue and rode onto Water Street. Without stopping, he rode into the trailer wheels of a tractor trailer. More people are apparently moving out of Pennsylvania compared to those coming here to live and work. Our correspondent David Payne reports growth is reported in some parts of the state.
The U.S. Census Bureau has released its latest population estimates. The report shows that for 2022, just under 13 million people called Pennsylvania home, a decline of about 40,000 from the previous year. Among Pennsylvania's 67 counties, the fastest growing since 2020 has been Pike County, where the population grew by 3.4%. Cumberland County was the second fastest. Other counties that saw growth during that period include Adams, Chester, and Northampton.
I'm David Payne, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
WHTM is reporting a big step forward at Three Mile Island. It's been 30 years in the making. The project to decommission Unit 2, which suffered a partial meltdown in 1979, is moving into a new phase, allowing crews to begin removing the core debris. Unit 2 had been in a monitoring phase for 3 decades. The company that owns Unit 2 says it will take about 6 years to remove the damaged remnants of the core and then another 7 or 8 years to completely dismantle the structure. Unit 1 is also on track for decommissioning, which is expected to be done by 2029. Joe, if you have $2.7 billion you're not doing anything with.
$2.7 billion?
Right. They would like your help taking down Unit 2.
What's in it for me?
Peace of mind, knowing that a piece of radioactive debris is no longer on Three Mile Island.
I don't live there, so it's not going to enhance
not
my
too
peace
worried.
Of mind.
Okay.
Right.
Unit 1 will only cost $1.2 billion to decommission, and that didn't melt down.
That's
just a normal one. So, yeah, that's called half price. Susquehanna River, Three Mile Island removal. Some other things that have popped up in the news. The U.S. government is going to do one thing about the migration dilemma. U.S. government announced Monday it'll dispatch Border Patrol agents to apprehend migrants in El Paso, Texas, if they have crossed the southern border surreptitiously, saying those taken into custody could be expelled, detained, or placed in deportation proceedings. So that'll be a step up there. With the end of Title 42 coming Thursday and migrants already seeking asylum in larger numbers, the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre is pushing back on Republican criticisms about the looming crisis. She tells reporters the Republicans are not willing to come to the table and discuss immigration reform to streamline and set broad guidelines for legal immigration.
Now, given all that House Republicans have had to say about our plan, you would think they'd have some grand alternative. But think again. Earlier this month, House Republicans voted to fire 2,000 Border Patrol agents.
Also in Washington, D.C., we got another dilemma. President Biden set to meet with the Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy today to discuss the debt ceiling. Both are going into it. Now, this is a sure way to make your agenda be productive. Both are going into it saying they do not expect that the meeting will help us resolve the financial obligations. Joe, we're going to do an On the Mark show, but we're not going to allow any calls or discussion or speak about both sides of issues. How do you think the show will go?
Well, you know, it's just typical of the Biden administration. Look at this guy can't meet with anybody. He can't answer questions.
Well, he's meeting with them, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's not. He doesn't hold press conferences.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't
he's
meet
so
the
hypocritical.
Public.
He's so bad.
He was going to be so open.
He seems Republican.
The most open and transparent administration in history, and yet the guy can't answer questions or schedule anything before 10 o'clock in the morning or after 4 in the afternoon.
Now, you'll be the first to admit Republicans are big hypocrites
in
Washington.
Hey, they are. In this, they are.
Right.
Because they voted 3 times during the Trump administration to raise the debt ceiling without any provisions
no
for cutting the budget.
Attached, right. Now,
so,
all of a sudden,
come on,
like, oh, we're angels.
They need to do that now. But, you know, this is like a stupid kabuki dance because It's a self-imposed limitation.
Right. And while Wall Street Journal did a story today, investors are already reacting, shoring up investments and selling off certain securities.
But let me ask you a question.
In advance.
What would the point of having a debt ceiling be if, as you approach it, it weren't designed to have you sit down and talk about whether or not you want to continue to expand the budget or the deficit?
The Republicans have the right idea, and the president has a budget idea. So, really, things are going just swimmingly the way they're supposed to, except they're not talking. Except for the lack of negotiation. We'll see what comes out of it today. Both sides say they're very adamant in their positions and have no plan on reducing their stance at all. Nobody's planning to go into it and say, well, this is all I need. Everybody's going in there and say, this is what I want. All right. Now, we have had a good show so far, talking to Brian Kerstedt of the county DA. We talked about a candle that will have to be extinguished at a Catholic church because Medicare says no open flames, or this particular flame might offend. It's not an open flame dilemma.
Somebody going into the chapel might be offended by the Catholic's eternal flame.
Candles and incense is like the single through line through every religion.
Well, that's true. And we got holy water, too.
Well, you guys got it all, but anyway. All right. 570-743-9565. And right now we're talking about the debt ceiling, where, of course, both sides are being
ridiculous.
Stupid, would you say? Childish?
Stupid, childish. Yes, absolutely.
Imbecilic.
Both sides.
So that's that.
We can't ruin the whole country because these two idiots can't get together.
There you go. We've been saying that for three decades. All right. 570-743-9565. Lance, you are on the mark. Thank you for calling in. It is an open phones day, the topic of your selection.
Okay. Well, I sort of want to put an addendum on yesterday, and thank you for straightening me out. The myth I had that in 52 years that was no machine guns used in any kind of a crime, that were registered, and you got that straightened out. Now it's going strong for 90 years, though, isn't it? Because that includes from 1986 till now.
Yeah, machine guns are pretty rare, and the people that own them are pretty scrutinized, and they tend to already be familiar with law enforcement and so on. So they're actual good guys, I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, and those are the good guys, the only good guys that would have guns under all kinds of restrictive laws that they're about ready to put on them. So,
and if I was a bad actor,
that was a myth I had for 40 years.
And if I was a bad actor and I was going to pretend to be a good guy and get an automatic weapon, I don't think it would work. I think you'd already have to. If you don't know any of the cops in your town, you might as well not even try.
Well, and one of them was a cop that misused his weapon, wasn't he?
Yeah,
that's true. But unless you're, if you'd be Joe Biden's kid, though, I guess he could pull that off, huh? Well, think about now. Say we had a mass shooting of 10 lives lost one day, 10 the next, 11 the next, 10 the next. We go on like that.
It'd be like drunk driving.
Those are drunk drivers. They're killing other people. And yet it's very rarely talked about. We have buzz driving, is drunk driving. What it should show to me would be a mass shooting and all the horror and everything that is caused by that, and then say, what if you caused this? Are you a mass shooter? Well, doggone it. I think a lot of people might be sobered up, do you think?
I don't know, but what should we do about that, Lance? Sober up? Yep. What else?
Well, we could put a little teeth in if you kill somebody. Down here at Harrisburg some years ago, there was an individual who, we don't have enough time to really get into the specifics, but he wound up killing six people in a drunk driving accident. They sentenced him for 26 years, and they went to bat and said this was just too much. I think they plea bargained it then down to 10, and I think that's just not enough. I mean, that person should be put away forever. I think you ought to be murdered one if you kill somebody that way. You say, well, you never got to do it. But say, I took my favorite 45 auto pistol and just drove down the road, stuck it out the window, and started the fire. I mean, what should I be charged with that?
Third degree.
Yeah. Really?
Or is that second degree?
I don't know. It seems like a deliberate act to me.
Well, it's not. It is premeditated because he announced it on the radio and then did it.
Okay. Well, that's the same thing you do when you get behind the wheel when you are impaired, or as I could tell.
Okay.
And if you think about it, last year the numbers spiked up about 14%. Now, that was the number of lives lost more than the previous year, than the total number of people who were shot with semi-auto rifles that year, about 300.
Well,
just a spike.
Well, I think the trouble is that most of the society enjoys drinking, and some of them enjoy drinking and driving. So nobody enjoys mass shootings, but everybody enjoys drinking. I mean, figuratively speaking, not literally. Joe, when's the last time you were drunk?
It's 20
years ago.
20 years. I was probably 20 years old, maybe, or 21.
Oh, it was 60 years ago. Holy smokes. But anyway, we get your point, Lance. DUI is far more prevalent.
Right.
And resolved.
I think that we should try to stop it a whole lot more than what we do.
Well, the trouble is that our legislature enjoys drinking also. Did you ever go to some of their cocktail fundraisers and all that sort of thing? So they're not going to, they don't go out and shoot people, but they definitely enjoy drinking. I don't know, a few of them DUI, but not too many of that.
Maybe they should all bring guns and just shoot each other. Wouldn't that be fun?
Generally, being intoxicated and shooting isn't really an ideal combination.
Not at all. Neither is driving. So we'll all agree on that.
All right, we got you, Lance. Okay, thank you so for reminding us of that. Right. Much appreciated. All right, hold on, Stan. We will be right back, but join the fray here, 570-743-9565.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence. 570-743-9565 is the open line. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com, and you can text us at 70236. Include the keyword OTM, and then your good message. You got 150 characters, which basically describes the calling population of our audience. Good morning, sir. You're on the mark.
Good morning. I got a question about the Eternal Flame controversy that the feds are what? That's a Catholic hospital.
Yes.
That they're threatening. Now I'm going to ask a simple question because I don't know the answer. Isn't there an Eternal Flame at the JFK burial site in Washington, D.C.?
There are a lot of Eternal Flames. There's one in Gettysburg, too.
Sure, they're all over. They're in a lot of churches of every stripe.
Right. Well, whether, you know, so it's a religious thing to have an eternal flame, or is it just a respectful thing? That's all I'm asking.
Well, it's a religious thing in this particular church.
Well, it's the light of Christ, which I guess would be the symbolism of it.
Eternal. Okay. So, and that harms who and how? That the feds want to pull funding or or not pay the, you know, Medicare because it's...
It sounds like they're afraid somebody will be offended, not
no,
that somebody
well,
is.
No, well, actually, they were claiming it was unsafe, too. That was their original start. She said the administration backed off because they saw there was no way they could win. This was perfectly safe. The fire marshal had said it was okay. It had never been a problem before, and it's a very important religious exercise. So if they went into court, what would they have? The flames have been on and never extinguished for over a decade, including one at St. Francis Hospital's Yale campus, which has been burning for 63 years.
Oh, my gosh. That's quite a wick.
So somebody keeps the gas bill paid, I'm assuming.
Yeah. No, it's wax.
No, I mean, they look at Gettysburg. They have the eternal flame there at the... monument. I'm trying to remember which one it is. The Peace Monument. The Peace
You know where
monument.
You get all your facts about candles, don't you?
No.
Wikipedia.
Oh, God.
Just saying.
Spare me from this.
Mark's full of them today.
He's full of it, all right.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I mean, I was just asking that because, you know, if they're going to extinguish that eternal flame, then I guess they better extinguish the one there at JFK's burial site, just to be fair, right? I mean, the government's paying for that.
Or maybe maybe that doesn't have a religious connotation. Maybe it means, like, we're eternally grateful, and this is one of the symbolism.
So who determines whether it's religious connotation or not?
Well, you'd have to go back to the architect, I guess, right?
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that's neither here nor there. That's just more stupidity coming out of this administration. Pathway.
I think it's
for
the government
illegal.
In general. The government was stupid long before Biden got there, I assure you.
But he's been part of it for 50-plus years. So what's that say? Anyways, you know, they're talking about, you know, the number of illegals going down. What'd she say, 90%? Well, that's because they're changing the definition of the way they do things also. You know, so when you change the definition in the way you do things, of course the numbers are going to change. You know, they're creating legal pathways for these people crossing the border so that they can come into this country and take jobs from other people. It's just... I can't say it on the air, so I won't. So it's just a bunch of horse dung that she's spreading. And then the Republicans want to cut 2,000 Border Patrol jobs. Really? Really? Where they have that in any type of proposal?
Well, I don't know.
It must have been a budget cut or something that was allowed to expire or something. Obviously, they didn't propose deep cuts.
Exactly.
But they must have done some, well, you know how they do. They take one sentence that you mean to say one way and they interpret it another and say, okay, well, it's like they say Republicans want to cut Social Security because one Republican had a proposal that would examine Social Security. And they say, see, they want to examine it so they can cut it.
Right. But their definition of a cut is if proposed spending is 10% increase next year, but instead, the budget that gets passed is only a 5% increase. Oh, my, there's a 5% cut. That's the way they work their math.
I think it's called
insanity. Although it's a 5% increase over the year previous, it's a 5% cut of proposed spending.
I think it's called insanity, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and in that case, very few of them could be able to go out and purchase firearms because of their mental disorder.
That's true.
So, and you were talking about debt ceiling, okay? Now, in my opinion, the debt's too high, which we all agree upon. But who is the one that says he will not 100% refuses to negotiate with Republicans on this? Who is that? Is it the Republicans, is it?
Well, they're going to have a meeting, so they must be planning to do something, although they both have issued statements saying they're not hopeful.
Well, I think what President Biden has said, and I can't disagree with him, is that the last three times under the Trump administration, it was raised in a clean bill. That's what he's asking for this time. If the Republicans were, and I'm a lifelong Republican, were so set on having debt reduction as part of the plan, why didn't they do it during the three times President Trump was in office?
I don't know. I wasn't in office, and frankly, I don't care that they didn't do it. That it should have been done. I agree, but they're doing it now. You know, the last two were probably under the Democrat control, weren't they?
Well, yeah, but they all agreed to do it. It had to be everybody had to agree.
The Republicans had no power.
Well, and that's not true. The Republicans, it was awfully close. In the Senate, it was completely down the middle.
Right, and so neither side had absolute power. I mean, look at how Joe Manchin kiboshed many things.
But in the House, where all bills for revenue start, the Republicans had no power.
This isn't exactly a revenue bill.
Right, and the president says he's willing to talk about budget cuts if they want to converse about that, but he's not willing to negotiate the debt ceiling itself.
The bottom line is, you're right, something has to be done about the deficit, but at what point do we do it? Do we run the risk of destroying this country's credit, throwing the entire financial system into a turmoil, losing billions of dollars for people in investments?
Or
do we just bite the bullet and then say the two things are separate, they both need to be addressed, and then go on with it and act like responsible adults?
All right, let me throw this out there, Joe. The Republicans have a plan. Biden has no plan. Biden submitted his proposed budget of, what, $6.8 trillion, which is about $2 or $3 trillion over any budget in the past 10 years. Okay? So, the Republicans want to cut spending, which makes sense. With a budget like he has, that Biden has proposed, he's not cutting any spending, is he?
When was the last time we had a budget?
Well, that is a good question. It's been quite a while.
It's been quite a while. So, I mean, I don't think Joe Biden's budget has a chance of passing, because we're continually playing this political game of now I got you, you SOB. If you remember Dr. Eric Burns' book, Games People Play from the 60s, that's exactly what they're doing down there. It's all about political advantage. It's got nothing to do with the people's business actually being conducted.
Right.
Sorry,
the White House,
President
Biden has said that they're willing to negotiate budget cuts and have all the budget conversations they want.
I don't believe that.
But that's fine. He could be lying. He certainly knows how to do that. But I'm just saying, he's just saying that the debt ceiling is non-negotiable. Everything else they'll talk about. And obviously the budget that he proposes is just a draft.
Wait a minute, Mark.
What?
The Republicans put a plan out to increase the debt ceiling. They did.
Okay.
In there, this $1 trillion, they said to increase it.
But doesn't it have strings
attached? Put something out.
Doesn't it have strings? I didn't say that they didn't. I'm just saying that
Biden is.
Right, but they're two different things. Both are two different terrible things that they do, but they're smushing the two together. Republicans are smushing the two together.
So you can't do one without the other. You're going to do one without the other, and then the other one will never get done. I understand how the system works down there. We'll raise the debt ceiling and just keep spending like we have on limited funds, and then next year the debt ceiling will be, we're up against it again. We have to do the same thing. And in the meanwhile, nothing ever gets cut. Am I wrong?
Yep-er. That's how it goes.
Well,
that's
wrong
the way
about
we've,
that.
That's the way we've done it at every White House since Reagan.
And none of it's right.
Sit down, Joe.
It needs to change. Although, wait a minute. Weren't we told when Clinton was in that there was a balanced budget? Well, it was extended out 10 years.
Well,
so that always departs, too, in my opinion, when they extend everything out.
It doesn't have anything
years.
To do with now, anyway. All right, we got to hit the road, sir. Thank you.
So, y'all have a great day.
Hey, you too, buddy. Thanks for calling. Yep. All right, 570-743-9565 is our telephone number. We're talking about the debt ceiling and negotiations, and Kevin McCarthy and the president meeting today. Has President Biden ever negotiated with McCarthy maybe years ago?
Yeah, they have.
Okay, so they know each other. Because that's supposedly important that you know each other and you get things, you have some rapport or whatever it is. I guess maybe President Biden could maybe relent a little bit and include one tiny little budget cut in his debt ceiling signature, and Republicans could probably ease up a little bit and not ask for everything right away, and then start the negotiations. And as Stan said, it's hard to negotiate with your brain removed.
But it's absolutely asinine to say that we're going to have a law that says there is a limit to the debt we can incur as a country, and then when we approach that debt, not sit down and discuss ways to lower it.
Right.
In addition to raising the debt limit. I mean, they're doing half the job. And that proves that what I've always said in Washington, they have vast ideas, but they're only half vast.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to have to hold on to that one. All right, 570-743-9565. Email us at onthemark@wkok.com. Text us at 70236. Include the keyword OTM. We have emails and texts and a caller. We'll handle all of this when we return. Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. Chris is patiently waiting. Well, I don't know, he might be impatient, but he still waited. Thank you, sir. You're on the mark.
Hey, when was the debt law passed? Anybody know?
The debt ceiling law?
Oh, my gosh, 78 yep. or something.
It's been a long time back. Let me. I don't know for sure, but I thought the 70s.
When was the debt ceiling law passed?
What's it say?
According to 1939. Congress instituted the... Okay. 39.
I didn't think it was quite that old. But anyway, I just... there is some thought going on that it's unconstitutional.
The debt limit is unconstitutional?
Yes.
How so?
Because there's a phrase in the Constitution that the credit of the United States shall not be questioned, which can be meet as they should never default on a debt.
Okay, so it shouldn't do something that usurps
and
that.
And so if there's a law that forces you to cause the United States credit to be questioned as in a default, it is therefore unconstitutional.
Gotcha.
Well, that seems a little hairy to me, but...
Well, it's in the Constitution, baby.
Okay.
But in any case, it's really legislative terrorism. Try to get too much passed with the debt ceiling by forcing it because of the debt ceiling bill. It's like, oh, I'm going to destroy the world economy just so I can get something passed that I couldn't possibly get passed without doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate part is I think these days I'd say there's in the House there's probably 30 or 40 Republicans that actually think it'd be a good idea
to default.
They'd rather destroy things.
Well, that would look bad for Biden, so it would help them in 2024.
Well, it would look bad for Biden, but they don't really care. They want a total revolution.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
That way. And they want to change things, and one way is create chaos and economic hardship, and things are ripe for changing.
Well, that's putting it all on one side, Chris, but the Democrats deserve a certain amount of blame, too, don't you think?
Stand up against them. I would think there'd be enough, almost all Democrats and enough Republicans to get a bill passed, but I'm not sure that's really true anymore.
You like to blame the Republicans for everything, but the Democrats are playing this game, too. They could come to the table and say, all right, we'll talk about debt reduction because we understand that needs to be done, too. Both sides are at fault here. I mean, you can blame the Republicans all you want, but the fact is they're both responsible.
For instance, they passed in the House is we get everything we want so we can get the debt ceiling done, pretty much.
They agreed to extend the debt limit.
Just encourages them to do it next time.
They agreed to extend the debt limit beyond the next election, the next presidential election, and they wanted in return to sit down and talk about debt reduction, which is a reasonable thing to do.
They wanted the people to accept their bill.
So. Isn't that a starting point for negotiation?
Well, yeah.
I'd
say the one thing the Democrats could do is say, okay, let's get rid of the Trump budget cut, too. But you're not going to get Biden ever to give up on bills he worked so hard to get passed just the last legislative session.
But what you're saying, in effect, is that there can be no deficit reduction because nobody will ever agree to cut anything that they want.
No, they won't agree to get anything they worked so hard in the last 2 years to pass. It's like if Trump Trump had gotten all the money to build his wall, and then the next legislation, the Democrats said, okay, we don't pass it. We won't allow a debt ceiling thing to pass unless you take all that money away.
Well, look at the Inflation Reduction Act, which has not reduced inflation at all. Cut that bill, roll that one back. That would save some money.
Yeah, I said they aren't going to pass what they call signature accomplishments from last session to do to cave into that threat.
But they could admit that what they passed didn't work and say, all right, we'll abandon that.
No, what they passed has barely taken effect yet because of the way money moves through Congress, from Congress passing a law to people actually being able to use it. So that's no argument at all.
Well, that's your view of the world, but that doesn't jive with a lot of other people's.
Well, but I mean, that's how the system works.
Right, that's how it's supposed to work.
It doesn't work right now because the money that's been passed is hardly out there.
Okay.
Only a small portion of it is. But in any case, it's really it's really no more than terrorism, and I think the Republican Party is in favor of terrorism right now. the extreme parts of the conservative movement. I don't really want to blame Republicans for it.
Well, the CBS said there's only about 3 or 4 session days left. Does that jive with what you're hearing, Chris? That it really
three
isn't.
3 or 4 sessions.
Days, yeah.
Well, the sessions end at
the end of
Christmas,
the year?
Doesn't it? Oh, you mean before the deadline?
Before the deadline, yeah.
Well, they can always come back in a session, can't they?
Oh, a special session, sure.
There's no law again.
Right, that's true.
I think it's Chris true. Has departed us. I mean, there's lines.
Still there, Chris?
The lights are flashing.
Chris? Oops, I guess I hung up on him accidentally.
No, I don't know. The lights kept
flashing. Oh, no, I'm here now again.
Oh, perfect. Sorry, we accidentally cut you off there for a split second.
I heard tapping and nothing and tapping and nothing.
Well, that was me playing with the phone, so you're welcome.
Drumming your fingers on the table. And
yep.
By the way, about the drop in shootings during the gun ban, you were poo-pooing that away the other day.
Right.
Like it.
Right, because
well,
I would go to gun shows then. You could
take a look at the graph, and like it's the lowest time ever. And you said something about cocaine.
Oh, crack cocaine was emerging.
Explanation for it, which I didn't quite follow at all.
I'm just saying that
there's high cocaine use, there's fewer mass shootings, or vice versa.
I was just trying to draw a picture of what's going on in the criminal justice system overall at that time. Incarcerations were way up. The crack cocaine and freebasing had started. So that's increasing criminality that happened to be happening. So people being jailed was up. But I also would go to gun shows at that time, and you could buy the exact same weapon. It just didn't happen to have a threaded barrel or the lug on it.
Yeah, but look at the sales of AR-15s also decreased.
Right, because they didn't have those things.
In that period, which means people weren't doing that.
They were, they were not buying them.
Look what happened to the sales of AR-15s and the number of shootings as soon as the law was eliminated.
What should we do now, Chris?
It goes up on a straight direct trajectory. It goes straight up almost.
It's a hockey stick.
And
yep.
Right, including two today.
Right.
Now, that evidence has got to count for something. I think it was the banning and then the unbanning of it that caused the big increase.
Right. Well, plus, at the time...
And it was the unbanning of it that caused the big increase.
At the time, people weren't that interested in owning them. They weren't popular rifles. Most people look at them and say, well, what do you need those for? But I think after the Clinton administration and people started to really get serious about fear of gun losses, you know, gun rights losses, a lot of guys looked at them as sort of being something you should have, you know, sort of a...
As long as the ban was in effect, people weren't really working toward it. And if it had stayed in effect, it would have, I think, the sales would have continued to decrease.
I think that's safe speculation.
Most gun owners don't want to go to the trouble of drilling the bore or whatever you have to do to get it, and adding strange things on your gun that you hardly ever use.
Well, it's a lot of fun to a lot of people. All right, we got
it's
you, Chris.
It's some fun to some people, but it's also fun to do other things with guns that you can use them for, and you don't really need to do those.
All right, we got to hit the road. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Chris.
All right.
Always appreciate it. Great observations all. Very much appreciate it. All right, Maiko, you are next. Last caller before a quickie break. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I want to talk about the southern border. I'm trying to make sense of it, okay? And this is what I believe, okay? Could be completely wrong, and you can call me a conspiracy theorist. But back when Trump was president, we had caravans of people coming to the border. And they were, solidly embraced by the Democrats and the left, okay? And Trump and the Republicans, not so much. So, you know, I have to question, where did these people get the money to come here with nice T-shirts that say, you know, Biden or whatever, and on and on and on? It was a preconditioning. These people were supported by enemies of the United States to get half of the country to say, hey, unlimited mass migration is great, okay? So then this election took place there, and Biden gets in, and now there's millions of people coming. And it's not just, you know, from the people adjacent to our border. It's from all over the country. How is this being funded? How are these people that are supposedly poor and looking for a better life, how are they coming by the millions without a concerted group of enemies of the American people, the American state, totalitarian people, funding this to weaken the United States? I mean, you know, again, if we look at what the gain is from this and do a cost-benefit analysis of unlimited mass migration across our border of anybody that wants to walk across it, I don't think it's going to come out favorable in the long term. And I believe that it's being done for the sole purpose to weaken the United States. Because essentially, you know, I've said this before, if the United States were to disappear this afternoon, you can imagine the pandemonium that's going to take place in the rest of the world in the next 3 days, okay? And, you know, we're not going to disappear overnight, most likely, but we're in the process of disappearing, and I think that process is being aided and abetted by the enemies of the state outside our borders and like-minded people in the United States that do not like this country, okay? And that's all I want to say. I believe what I'm saying is a warning to people to take your eyes off of all the shining objects that the mainstream media is putting in front of our eyes and start focusing on what is good for the future of America. And I don't think we're doing a good job at that.
Oh, gee, I like those bright, shiny objects. They make me happy.
Well, you know what? I just had someone who basically called me an enemy of the state, okay? And because I accused her that, you know, she needs to take her eyes off the bright, shiny objects, because a lot of these are just being used to distract her so that evil people can fly under the radar, okay, and do evil things and that are bad for this country.
Well, what are these bright, shiny objects? What are these? Give me an example of these. Give me an example of these bright, shiny objects that are distracting us from the real issues.
Okay, the bright, shiny objects. Right now, the attacks on Ron DeSantis is really a bright, shiny object.
Who?
It's basically Ron DeSantis. That's his name, the guy from Florida.
Is he still running? I haven't heard anything about him in 3 weeks.
You got to be kidding.
Well, I know he was the
There's not much about him recently.
Yeah, he was the beloved in February and March, but nobody said anything in April.
Do you watch CNN and MSNBC and all that stuff?
Not too much. Listen to CBS and NPR. Yeah, DeSantis is old news. He's off the...
Okay. Supposedly the big headline this morning on CNN was DeSantis cited by Disney. Now, I didn't read the article, to go further. But, you know, so there's the bright, shiny object there. The debt, the unlimited debt. We all know what's happening to the value of the dollar. Anybody that's paying attention can see that because of our debt spending, that the value of the dollar is dropping, inflation's going up, and other countries are trying to fall into the umbrella of China and get rid of the United States as a reserve currency. Because if that happens, then we're really going to see inflation. We're really going to see the cost of the, you know, carrying our debt skyrocket, and I don't think it's going to be pretty. And I'm going to admit, I'm soft. My hands, they're not crusty like my dad's, you know, who grew up on a farm. I can't work as hard as I used to, but I mean, I never could work as hard as a good strong man, because my muscle tissue just didn't support that. And I think the United States people, I mean, people are busting their humps trying to get by, and I think this business with the debt and the unlimited spending and all the corruption and graft and waste of money that's going on is just weakening our society. And this border attack is really unrelentless. I mean, it's beyond my belief that millions of people are just coming across, and right now there's a mass of people ready to flood the border, you know, the places where you're allowed to cross our border. They're going to flood those places, and the people are going to be so overwhelmed trying to control that and manage that, that the rest of the people can just walk across wherever they want.
I think part of the problem, and the biggest part of it, and the biggest shiny object I see, is that our president won't talk to the American people, won't meet the press in an open and free forum where they ask him questions about his policies, how they're implemented, why they're implemented, what he's doing, what he's not doing. We have had the least open presidency in my lifetime. I mean, this guy just absolutely is either incapable mentally or whatever, or unwilling, for whatever reason, to actually address the American people on issues they care about. We're not talking about the border crisis. We're talking about whether or not airlines should reimburse people for flights that they have to cancel. That's Joe Biden's big thing.
Well, I don't think he wants to mess up. Incidentally, I'm looking at CNN.com, and there's 125 stories on the front page, and Ron DeSantis is not there. So.
I was gonna say, he wasn't on the TV section this morning.
He's
either.
Old news. But anyway, President Biden's not going to do anything because he'll mess up, and you know that would hurt. You'll never hear the end of it. You're not going to show him walking anywhere. What if he stumbles, even if it's just incidental, not even related to his age?
Well, then, isn't that something we should be aware of as voters in the next election? Isn't that something the Democrats should be saying, listen, we love you, President Biden, but you just can't do the job?
Joe, do you think it has anything to do with President
I'm
Biden?
I'm going
to
predict he's not going to run.
Okay. He's already running.
For one reason or another, and right now Obama and his people are scheming to see who they're going to put in there. Now, let's face it. Everyone that thinks about it knows that Bernie Sanders would have been the nominee if it hadn't been for it being rigged to put up Joe Biden, because, you know, they knew Sanders would not win. Biden had a big chance of winning, so they had everybody else stand down. Biden stood up. He got elected. And the similar thing is going to happen this time if nothing takes Biden out on its own. They're not letting him run.
That's not the best choice of words. Taking him out implies that someone's going to off him.
No, so I do believe I said something takes him out, like a major stroke or some fall.
No.
Is totally what I meant. I don't.
Nikki Haley got into the trouble saying that too, just because she says once you get to 80, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to fill out the term to be 86. But everybody corrected her and said, no, actually, once you get to 80, you have a great chance of getting to 90. And this is, of course, Joe's greatest comfort that he's heard in the media all week is you're 79. Right?
79.
Okay, so in July, you'll flip, your odometer will flip over to 80. And, somebody even had statistics to correct her saying, once you get to 80, it's not easier, but it's much easier to get to 90.
As Don Lemon has told us, if you're a woman after 40, you're done.
It's done. Hey, Mike, thank you so much. Great opinions all. We appreciate it. We got to hit the road, but thank you, sir.
Bye.
You're taking care now. Thanks,
see you, buddy.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Your home for news, AccuWeather, and sports. Celebrating 90 years of serving the Susquehanna Valley. We are WKOK Sunbury.